Joining us in a studio right now is Jake Shepherd. He, of course, is from Synthesis. He chats to us every now and then. And this morning, we want to talk about whether we should work on our strengths or our weaknesses. We used to always say, you know, they're an all-rounder. That meant that they were good at maths and could play rugby and had blonde hair. But what does it mean today? Are we aspiring to be all-rounders, or should we be looking to excel at certain areas and certain parts of our lives? It's a very, very interesting question, and it's a very, very relevant one, as well as the way in which we focus on education is changing. Jake Shepherd, a very good morning.
Good morning, Howard.
Thank you for being back. Every time I say to Jake, come on, I need you on, this is what we want to talk about, he says, fine, cool. And I think I'm going to scare him, but then yet I don't. All right, so should we be focusing on our strengths or our weaknesses?
Well, a seemingly obvious answer to this question is that we should work on both our strengths and our weaknesses. However, I actually believe there's a benefit in focusing on one over the other. And really the tricky aspect of this question is the area of focus changes depending on where we are in our journey of life. So at the start of life, it's really important to work on our strengths for two reasons. One is, I think it's a great investment of effort, and it builds our competence and our confidence. Right. So you might say, well, what is a strength? So we all have talents.
Right.
And when we invest in those talents and we learn about it and we practice it, we can improve those talents to a point where they become a strength of ours. And if you think about it, like examples of talents, some people, they can solve complex, let's say, mathematical problems quite easily.
Right.
Or they always have a positive disposition. If you think of yourself, smile, damn it. Okay.
Right.
Those are strengths. They're talents that we have. And if you want to look for talents in your life, you can see the things that you're drawn to, things that you seem to pick up really quickly, where you naturally seem to know what the next steps are. And where you surprise yourself occasionally and say, well, how on earth did I do that? That was really great.
But that's as an adult.
No, even as a child, there are talents that we have, and we can pick them up. And we get a tremendous sense of satisfaction from doing those things, and we wonder when we can do them next.
Right. It's because we like the things we're good at. We don't like the things we're not good at.
Yeah.
So we're drawn to the things we are good at.
Exactly. And I think as part of strengths-based psychology, we really have to ask ourselves the question, well, why should we work in our strengths? And underpinning strengths-based psychology was a study that was done in Nebraska in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to do a rapid reading study to see which methods could actually help students with rapid reading.
Right.
And they took 6,000 students from 10th grade.
Right.
And what they did is they tried three different rapid reading techniques. And they did the study. And it turned out that the different techniques actually, one was no better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers actually made quite a big difference. The different teachers.
Which
is quite interesting.
That's, yeah.
And one of the findings of that study was the fact that if you try and say, well, how many words per minute can you read with 50% comprehension? Average readers started off at 90 words per minute and they ended up at 150 words per minute. That's a 66% improvement.
Mm-hmm.
But what they found, the most surprising thing, was an ad hoc finding after the study was completed. And they saw that above average readers, or the really great readers, those who came into the study with 350 words per minute, landed up at 2,900 words per minute.
So their growth was exponential. 800%
growth rate. So if you think about that, you can see how important it is to invest in those areas where you have an above average ability. And, it basically means that you get significantly better returns from an investment point of view, investing in those areas of strength.
I love that way of looking at it.
Than you do in areas where return on effort. Yes, return on effort is huge.
Mm.
And then the next question we have to say is, well, how does confidence play a role? I started off by saying confidence was important. And early on in life, my son had many, many challenges.
Mm.
And at the time, I remember reading a book by Dr. Mel Levine, A Mind at a Time.
Mm-hmm.
Which focuses on neurodevelopment. And in the book, one piece of advice that stuck with my wife and I was a guiding principle that we used for the rest of my son's education. And that was that a parent's responsibility is to get their child through the formative schooling system with their self-esteem intact.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
There's, if there's one challenge I think that all parents have, it is to get their kids to emotionally survive school.
Exactly.
And which is a terrible thing.
But it basically gives you as a parent an amazing guide star of, you know,
of what's important
in your decision making. Mm, well, what's actually important?
In 1774, on this day, Austria became the first nation to introduce a state education system. I'm convinced that that is the system that we still use today.
I'm sure it is.
From Austria in 1774.
If not from before.
I'm being kind.
And then, recognize the fact that knowledge can always be picked up later, but it's almost impossible to rebuild self-belief and self-esteem when it's been undermined and destroyed at school. And I think that's something just to bear in mind as
Absolutely.
A parent.
Absolutely.
And so what we need is we need some early wins when we're growing up. We need to be able to build our confidence. We need to prove ourselves that we can bring something of real worth to the world that is appreciated by others. And the way to do this is to really focus on our talents so that we can have that above average ability that people will stand up and recognize. And that builds our confidence. So based on everything we know, it seems that we can largely ignore our weaknesses and everything I've said. And we can just really plaster over our weaknesses with simple coping strategies. And a great example of that is a doctor friend of mine who really struggles with dealing with his staff and difficult issues that crop up with his staff.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls in his wife to mediate in those difficult situations. Because she's far better at dealing with people than he is.
Right.
And so maybe that's just a coping mechanism, and it's something that actually works very effectively.
But I think that's brilliant.
And it's brilliant. So the question is, surely we can continue life along those lines and just plaster over the weaknesses and just...
Right. So do we, there's the question for us, is it important to work on our weaknesses, to improve our weaknesses, or should we focus on our strengths? We're going to take some traffic and some ads. When we come back, we're going to answer that question. Time is 7:23, about to go 7:24. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. Jake Shepherd is in studio with me. We're talking about should you focus on your strengths or weaknesses. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Share your stories, your experience, and what you think of the subject. All right, so is it worth focusing on our weakness, given the fact that in life, the things that we need to do, we need to excel at?
So I think the strategy of focusing our strengths, which does pay big dividends, is undermined really on two fronts, especially later on in life. One is an external front, the world around us, and a second is an internal second front, which is an internal confrontation with our inner self.
Mm-hmm.
So on the external front, we see certain people and we think, well, they've got it all. They've got no weaknesses.
Yes.
But the truth is all of us have weaker areas of our personalities and areas that need bolstering. And for introverts, it might be that, you know, get them into a social gathering and they crumble. And for thinking types, it might be that they don't show appropriate empathy to a friend in need.
Right.
And to address these weaknesses, we employ something called personas. They are characters, they're scripted lines, and they're strategies that we pull out when the situation demands it. And we've
spent a whole life practicing those and putting them out there.
Exactly.
Right.
And when life actually throws us a curveball and it demands a more nuanced response, and basically the scripted lines aren't adequate anymore, then our weaknesses are exposed.
Because we haven't got a tried and tested way of dealing with
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Right.
So in order to operate effectively in the world, we need to improve those areas that have been in the past ignored or skipped over.
Right. So let's just say, and I think many parents have this issue. They have a son who might hate going to play soccer. But of course, that's what all the kids are doing, and they all go to soccer club, and that's part of a social life. They have a daughter who might not want to, I don't know, go to dancing or go to something that all the other girls are doing. As a parent, we often want to, and we do push our children to do these things that they don't want to do, for whatever reason. Maybe they don't feel good enough. Maybe they aren't good enough. And, you know,
so I think there's,
how important is that?
I think there is benefit, because effectively it might be socialization skills that you know, a child might not want to actually get into, and a parent's actually putting them into different situations so they do start addressing some of those areas that they're not comfortable with. And I think there's huge benefit in doing that. I just think in those early formative years, spend about 80% of your time working on your strengths,
right,
and really trying to make the most of who you are and the talents that you have. I remember early on in life becoming totally and utterly fixated with software. I would spend...
Really, I'm shocked to hear that.
Shocked.
Well, never saw that one coming. Yeah.
I spent hours every day in front of my computer honing the craft and really learning how to create complex systems.
Right.
And that was my fun. That was my joy. That's what I loved doing. Computers fascinated me. They're predictable, clearly.
Right.
Unlike people.
So that was good for you, right.
And I had a natural talent and passion for
this. Right. Because people were confusing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you look at Synthesis as a company, it was built on the back of those talents and the talents of other developers like me.
Right.
Who actually might not have had people skills, but they had deep technical skills. But later on, I realized that honing my craft and working with computers and really getting to get software to perform almost magical feats did nothing to help me deal with people. And I became flustered when I started having to work with clients, lead a team, or address an audience.
Right, because you hadn't strengthened that at all.
I didn't even understand my own emotional state. How on earth was I supposed to understand the emotional state of others?
Right. So which means that we need maybe some level of competency in all areas.
Yeah. And later on, I came to realize that I'm actually called on to build people. Both myself and others.
Right.
And in order to do that, I needed to start working on my traditional weaknesses. I needed to start learning how to have dialogue with other people, you know, trying to understand a bit of philosophy and psychology, and trying to bolster myself that way.
But that's interesting because effectively what was a weakness for you became a strength.
Well, I think it can be. It might not come as naturally as it does to other people, but it can become a strength. So I think really we need to look at weaknesses as maybe they are barriers to achieving what we are meant to achieve. Or maybe they're the artificial glass ceilings that are preventing us from taking flight.
It's so interesting because we so often, I mean, I can't stand it when parents tell their children that they can be anything they want to be, because they can't be.
Well,
they can't. They can't. Well, I will never be.
One step at a time.
It may be, but you know, it's a false dream. So no matter how hard I work at becoming a international tennis player, it'll never happen.
So I think if you're trying to aim for it to become excellent in a very narrow sense, then you're 100% right.
Right.
But I do think there are things that hold us back. And
I am chatting with Jake Shepherd. Time is 7:30. We're going to take news headlines. We're going to speak to Louis Coppers for the sports, and then we'll be back to continue this conversation. I'd love to hear from you. 34519 or 0618951019. Should we hone in and should we focus on our strengths, or should we work on our weaknesses? I want to hear from the parents. I want to hear from you what your experience has been in this regard, because we have all had them. Right, to Jake Shepherd joining me in studio. We're talking, do we work on our strengths or weaknesses? Louis Karp is saying, how would Jake react to the fact
to
Tiger Woods? Yeah.
And I mean, experience. So I think my reaction for that is the parents aren't playing the odds particularly well in terms of their child's long-term success, because he's saying effectively that those parents took a lotto ticket and they bet on their kids winning the lotto. And the problem with, if you look at tennis and you look at golf, only the top 10 golfers and the top 10 tennis players really make it big. Everybody else battles to survive.
Yeah.
And that's not really an effective way of trying to.
Well, how many other Tiger Woods parents are out there
that we don't know about and have set up their child for disaster? So I think you need to actually look at the ones that weren't successful as well and to see whether that strategy is actually an effective one. But really coming back in terms of needing to work in our weaknesses, and I said there was an internal front, our internal self requires that we work on our weaknesses. And I read a great insight from James Hollis in his book, Finding Meaning in the Second Half of Life, where he says most of our life, the first part of our life, is spent answering the question, what does the world want of me? And we have to marshal our strengths, and we have to and answer the question, what do our parents, what do our siblings, our spouse, employers, employees, what does the world want of me? And we spend a lot of time trying to answer that. And we have to answer that because we need to develop an ego, a sense of self strong enough to stand on our own feet and leave our parents and create a provisional life. And working on our strengths helps us achieve this. But the second half of life is fueled by a need for meaning. And it's spent answering the question, what is my soul, what is my psyche want of me? And we need to honestly find a path that energizes us and inspires us.
And so it's so interesting.
Yeah. So it's not enough just to charge up the hill and prove our worth to the world. We have to actually prove our worth to ourselves.
Right.
As well.
And what good is that doing to the world if we're charging up the hill?
No. So I think it does a lot of good, and it's an integral part of.
No, but aren't you saying that finding meaning and
becomes more and more important as we get older in life? And effectively, when you think about that, your soul demands are actually separate from your conscious mind. And many times it demands that you make decisions that enlarge you and to shy away from those decisions that diminish you. And it doesn't really care a hell of a lot about what your talents are. So it really focuses on us and what provides meaning in our life. And we then have to figure out and serve what life asks of us. That's our job in the second half of life.
That's so interesting. But then what that also means is that an expectation of our children to do so much good and be good and do things for the world is all at when they're young is almost counter to who they are and what they should be doing, because actually we might want them to move to that.
And I think that's a beautiful sentiment. In other words, that sentiment of wanting the world to be better.
Yes.
I think Piaget in his, cognitive development talks about the messianic era, right, which is like your late, teenage area of life, where those are important things. It's just, I think what we need to realize is we have to sort our own life out first before we can try and sort out the rest of the world. It's hard enough just trying to sort your own life out. But really try and go back to answering the question, or should we work in our strengths or address our weaknesses? In answer to this, I want to use soccer as a metaphor for life. And really, if we look at strengths as the forwards and the wings that help us score goals needed to win the game, without strengths, the best we can hope for is a 0-0 draw.
Brilliant. Absolutely love that. Please say that again.
So without strengths, the best you can hope for is a 0-0 draw in life.
I love that.
So we serve ourselves best when we hone our talents so we can score goals. And then we need to look at the weaknesses as the defensive backs and midfielders that prevents goals being scored against us. So no game can ever be won by defense alone. But on the other hand, many a defeat has been snatched from the jaws of victory when you don't have a defense.
Absolutely.
And I think the challenge is really figuring out where we are in life and what we need to do to work on next. So in short, the answer is work on our strengths and plaster over our weaknesses so that you can start winning some games. And later on in life, our weaknesses should take priority, not just to prevent goals, but to lift our lives to the next level.
Love it.